This is On Second Thoughts. I'm Celeste Headlee. This week is National Crime Victims' Rights Week, and chances are you actually know someone who's been affected by domestic violence.
He drew me in pretty quickly, and things started to change after a while.
He got very possessive and controlling.
After I started having a baby, like, things just got worse and worse and worse.
Every discussion turned into an argument, and then he started becoming physically abusive.
Victims' advocates want the legislature to pass Marcy's Law. That's M-A-R-S-Y. It would amend the state constitution to give crime victims more rights. Joining me now is Pastor Sabrina McKenzie from Georgia's Task Force Against Domestic Violence. It's good to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So what exactly does Marcy's Law do? What would it change?
Marcy's Law, basically, just as you said, Celeste, it gives equal rights to the victim. Right now, where it stands in Georgia, the accused or the person who has been convicted has rights according to the Sixth Amendment. However, the victim, the person that's being victimized, only has statute rights. And so Marcy's Law gives them constitutional rights, which makes it an equal playing field. If their rights are violated at this moment, then there's no repercussion. There's no recourse. It's just, oh, by the way. And we've seen several cases where the woman has been impeded, where her rights, it's like she's victimized twice. So she's victimized by the person when it happened, and then she gets in court, and there's no help and there's no recourse.
Can you give me an example of what you're talking about?
Absolutely. There was a young lady in Macon where her boyfriend, or I believe it was her husband, he beat her. And that same day he was released on probation. She was on probation. It was a technicality, and they released him. He started stalking her. Within 8 days, he killed her in front of her daughter. The DA was asked, how could this be? Why did she not know? Was she notified that he was being released? And the DA said, well, it takes 30. This was in Macon. It takes 30 days in Macon for them to get the notification. That's insane. So, again, you know, it could have been if Marcy's Law was implemented or in place, we could have gone back and say, well, no, there, you have to notify them before they're released. You have to do this. You have to do that. Right now, the DA said it was just a mistake. So there have been too many mistakes and too many murdered women and murdered children as a result of not having equal rights to the law.
And we have this tweet from Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle, who says Georgia voters need the opportunity to decide if victims should have the right to be heard. At this point, it sounds like what you're saying is those who are accused of crimes or convicted of crimes have more constitutional rights in Georgia than victims. Is that accurate?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And because of that, is that fair for a person who has committed a crime to have more rights to the law than the person that is being victimized? It's insanity.
What kind of things would Marcy's Law put in place? You mentioned notification, letting somebody know that someone who had assaulted them or abused them in some way in the past had been released from custody. What else would Marcy's Law include?
So notification is crucial because right now, notification, it varies depending on the county. Also, proceedings, participating in the court proceedings. So she has a right to know when the proceedings are, to participate, to be there, to show up. So those primarily are the two functions that right now are not solidified, and it changes based on county.
We're going to talk in just a moment about the domestic violence, especially in particular, and violence against women, although domestic violence does not always refer to women. Most of the time it does. But Georgia has a particular problem in this area, and I wonder why you think that is.
Georgia is ranked 9. In terms of the United States, number 9
for murder,
and on that list, most of those women are African American, and so yes, Georgia every year places in the top 10 for murder. Why does that happen? Well, statistics have proven that usually when it's a high crime area, when there's low job, when there's disparity, when there's nihilism, when the people are hopeless without resources, then it tends to be a higher rate of crime, violence, and domestic violence. So we found that, you know, across the states, across the borderlines, but Georgia just happens to rank top 10 every single year. So because it's happening in Georgia, because we know there's a real problem, we are looking for Marcy's Law to pass because we have to protect women and we have to protect victims.
How? What kind of conversations have you had with politicians? Because I know that oftentimes victims feel as though they don't get treated, taken seriously. Oftentimes they have a hard time getting cases of stalking or abuse prosecuted. So what have your conversations with politicians been like in terms of taking this seriously?
You know, I think I bring a balance to it because I'm an activist and an advocate, but also it's personal to me. My sister was murdered by her husband. She was stabbed. In front of her children. So for me, this is personal. And when I'm speaking to politicians, a lot of times they're talking about, you know, black and white. How does this relate to the law? How does this look on paper? Constitutional rights. We already have too many constitutional rights. So I think I bring a balance to them of what it looks like for the victim. I get to bring the real life. This is a person that is in need of help and that is voiceless in the system. This is not about, you know, just the legal system and what it looks like on paper, but people are dying. So once we convey that message, and that's why I love Marcy's Law and the work that they're doing, because once we get to speak on behalf of the victim, we see the politician's humanity come out and we see them begin to weigh, you know what, this doesn't make sense for a person who has committed a crime to have constitutional rights and the person that is being victimized to have no rights.
Obviously, a very passionate advocate for against domestic violence, as Pastor Sabrina McKenzie of Georgia's Task Force Against Domestic Violence. Sabrina, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
As you heard, Georgia ranks ninth in the nation for the rate at which men murder women. And there's an organization in Decatur that's trying to save lives by actually changing the way that men think and talk about women and behave around them, especially men who have a history of violence. Lee Giordano is the director of training for Men Stopping Violence. Hi there.
Good morning, Celeste.
So explain your approach to me. Is your entire organization just focused on men?
We're focused on organizing men to end male violence against women. But in organizing men, we work with men and women. So we deliver educational services to men, intervention services to men, and prevention services.
Now, the intervention is kind of the classic case of what you guys do, right? Explain how that works.
So we were started as an intervention organization in 1982. So we've been in the metro Atlanta area for 35 years now. And we've broadened our scope beyond intervention, and we've tried to deepen our approach by including intervention and prevention together in educational courses for men. So we have a family violence intervention program. It's a state-certified program where men who may have been arrested for domestic violence or may be referred by another agency or another person in the community come for 24 weeks to be accountable for their abusive behavior and to change their belief system.
You're fighting a pretty difficult battle when we have a culture that in some ways supports the idea that men should be dominant over a woman. You have that shows up in movies, that shows up in music. It's been labeled as rape culture, especially recently. So in the 35 years that the organization, not that you've been there that whole time, but in the 35 years that the organization has been working, what kind of progress do you think has been made?
Well, it's very hard to measure because we are working for social change. We're focused on individual change. So we want men to change their behavior. But we can never know how, if after coming to our class, they have stopped their abuse. So what we've shifted to doing is not just focused on individual change, but working to organize those men so that they're working in their communities for change as well. And so we've become more successful over the years at engaging men and turning them into advocates. Because after 24 weeks...
It's like a pyramid scheme of social change.
Exactly. So what we want is, what we've found out over 35 years is the 24 weeks that we have with men are a great training ground for those men to learn about themselves, but also learn how to talk to other men. And we support a community accountability. And so we think that if we're ever going to end...
What does that mean, community accountability?
If we're ever going to end male violence against women, then we need everyone in our communities feeling like they have a role in prevention and intervention. So instead of someone is abusing a woman within a faith community and everyone's saying this is none of our business, we need to be saying that, no, in this community, this is not what happens, and it is our business because we want this to be a safe place for women. We also need to hold our community institutions accountable. So if there are stories in the media or, like with Marcy's Law, if there's change that needs to happen down at the state capitol, then we need to be the men that we're working with, the men that we're organizing, will be there trying to create change.
Let me bring you back into this, Sabrina, if I possibly can, because this sounds like the two of you are working for the same things. And I wonder, to what extent do you think our culture is still supporting the kind of behavior on the part of men that led to your sister's murder?
Oh, culture plays a great role in the environment of abuse and violence, because TV perpetuates violence, radio oftentimes perpetuates it, music, you know, videos, and then you go home and you have what to release on. People begin to act out those things that they are constantly bombarded with. So when you say we're doing the same work, we talked about that, and we're going to partner together, because oftentimes you have women, we deal primarily with women and providing resources, help, assistance, light, gas, location, you know, safety, shelter, and counseling. However, the men, oftentimes, you're not going to find them volunteer to go get counseling or volunteer to go get help. But that's why they are there. And oftentimes when men go, it's because they're court appointed. We want to have a way to have men have access. Maybe jail may not be the recourse, because you'll find that a lot of women don't want their husbands or significant others to be locked up. So there has to be medicinal methods for them to get help. And so you're absolutely correct in saying that.
How do you, Lee, how do you get men into the program? Is it almost always because they're court ordered?
No, only about 50% of the men who come to us are court ordered. So we work really hard to partner with community agencies that will refer men to us. Sometimes men come to us because they've heard about our reputation. Sometimes they come referred by a therapist. Sometimes they come through a referral from the workplace, a faith community. So we try to reach everywhere in the community that may be aware of abuse that's happening, so that they can access our services. And one of the important things to know, and Sabrina mentioned this a minute ago, is that there are racial disparities when it comes to the policing of violence against women. And so if we only relied on the court, then we would most likely only be addressing violence against women in communities of color or poor communities, because men with wealth or men with white privilege are less likely to be arrested for domestic violence. And so we have to find these other resources, these other sources of referrals, so that we can address violence against all women and hold white men accountable for their abusive behavior and wealthy men accountable for their abusive behavior.
So what are the demographics? Do you end up getting both people of color, men of color and white men in your program?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have three multiracial classes that are diverse. We also have a class that is just for African American men, not because we think that they're more violent, but because we know that racism is a factor in their lives. And if we want them to be vulnerable in a classroom setting and be accountable for their abuse, then having a space where they can talk about the racism that they're experiencing and the violence that they're perpetuating is a useful space to create for them.
How do you go about getting beyond something that someone has grown up? I mean, that becomes, for some men, part of their identity.
Yeah.
How do you get through that?
Well, 24 weeks isn't enough to do that. So we start a process. We teach a process. And what we often see is that men will understand the lessons from our curriculum and complete the class before they fully applied all of those lessons. And so the behavior change takes a lot longer than the knowledge that we give them. So we seek to keep them involved. And so after men complete our class, they're eligible to go into our community restoration program. And that's a place where they continue to have a community of men to work with, but they also go out and they're sort of our volunteer wing. They're down at the state capitol lobbying. They were very active in this past session. They also give presentations. Sometimes they even turn into class facilitators. And so that's part of our model, is that Because it's lifelong work, we want to keep men involved, give them more opportunity, and continue their training through their involvement with us.
So I wonder what you think about social media and its role in all of this, because in some ways social media helps to get attention to some of these things. There's the hashtag Marshy's Law on Twitter. But at the same time, one of the things we have seen is some very virulent attacks against women who are on social media by men. So what's the pros and cons here?
So I think social media is a great organizing tool. It's a great tool for people to gain access to information they may not have had. But it also mirrors our culture that we've been talking about. It's a culture that is disrespectful to women. And when there's anonymity with behind a computer screen, then we see bullying and harassment happening in ways that we never have before. So it's not a specific area that we focus on, but it's certainly something we respond to, and we have a Twitter account and Facebook account that we're active using to combat some of that.
Which I've used, and we have a minute left, so let me put the same question to you, Sabrina. Do you think that the current state with social media is helping or hurting this cause?
I think social media can do both. And so the person, the individual or the organization has to take the responsibility to use social media for the good. And that's what we try to do at the task force. And that's what we do with Marcy's Law as well. When you have a culture that you see the president of the United States had an incident.
We're not going to repeat that. Yeah.
Had an incident, right, with a woman, though, but brushed it off and just said, that was locker room talk. That's the culture and the climate that we live in. So social media, tweets, Facebook, we are living in a technology generation and we cannot ignore that. So we have to use those different means to reach the masses. But when you speak of culture, if the highest office, the executive office, is engaging in that, then how do you think women will be treated?
That is Pastor Sabrina McKenzie. She's with Georgia's Task Force Against Domestic Violence. And Lee Giordano is a training director for Men Stopping Violence. Lee and Sabrina, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Celeste.
We appreciate it.
That's our show for today. We want to hear from you. What single thing do you think that we could do to prevent violence against women in our state? You can find us on Facebook or on Twitter. It's at OST Talk. For today, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Bad weather out there. Stay safe. Have a great day.